Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Not the happiest day here on the podcast for those of us in the sports media industry, but a day nevertheless.
Indeed, indeed. We'll probably touch a little bit on the ESPN layoffs later. I'm planning to potentially write an article about it tonight/today for those listening. We'll see if that comes to fruition. Hopefully it does. Dan, I guess we're just going to start off with a little bit of spring practice. Obviously, we don't want to take a ton from it, but nonetheless, at least the defense seemed to show us a few things that that should have us more optimistic than we were going into the season before.
Yeah, I think last week we said, like, in a spring game, you can almost always find a thing to point to as a optimistic view or a pessimistic view. Obviously, if you were in the optimist this week, you are looking at Syracuse's defense, which was pretty dreadful last year and really outplayed the offense in the spring game. You can take the opposite stance if you'd like. I don't personally think that the offense is going to take some like giant step back despite returning a lot of crucial players and adding a year of experience to many younger guys, but wouldn't shock me if that is how many took it away. It was overall, not the most exciting game, but by August, none of us will really remember it, I don't think. So it's not a huge deal. And hopefully that it was more about the defense really stepping up than it was about the offense. Or you can also just say it was at 10 a.m. and no one wants to play football at 10 a.m.
Right, completely. And you know, I think Babers last year definitely wanted to impress the crowd, generate ticket sales, get folks talking about, you know, what this offense could potentially be. I mean, they scored 13 touchdowns in the 2016 spring game. The offense only managed one. In this one, the defense scored the other one. That was courtesy of Antoine Cordy. It was great to see him back. I think, you know, performances from guys like him, guys like Chris Frederick, these are all positives. And, you know, a lot of people probably, at least that were in attendance, it seemed like folks that watched online like the rest of us, that nobody seemed all that thrilled with the output. I saw some doomsdayers kind of start to show themselves right off the bat. I'm not in that camp at all. I know you're not either. This is simply a very, very pared down offense that looked like a pared down offense. I mean, the amount of walk-ons that got playing time, I mean, I'd say arguably the best offensive play, other than Devin Butler's touchdown over the other Devin Butler, was Jesse Connor's kind of swing pass, what, he gained about 30 yards on that from Mahoney. I think it was Mahoney, yeah. And that was probably the best play by Mahoney and the best play by any non-Butler offensive player all day. I can't and won't read into it because I think folks can drive themselves nuts thinking about what that offense couldn't do in that game on Saturday.
Yep, and honestly, it probably isn't much different than any other spring practice, aside from, you know, there being a few thousand people watching. And it actually did look like a pretty good crowd for a 10 a.m. spring game. It looked like probably more people than we've had in a couple of years, which is nice. But overall, like, I don't think it's worth getting too upset about. And if they had played really well, I don't think it would have been worth really getting overly, like, you know, start setting your win expectations at 9 wins either. Like, it's a spring game. It only possibly means so much. We'll worry a lot more once we get to September.
Right. I mean, you know what? If you were going to have a 14-0 game, at least the first team beat the second team. I would much prefer that over the second team winning 14-0. I think that would at least give some rightful causes for concern.
Yeah, I mean, that's where you get, you know, especially when it's not like this team has been, like, it's not Alabama where it's just like five stars playing five stars. Like, there's a pretty big gap between the first and second team, so that would have been a concern. So yeah, I definitely pray about a checkout.
Indeed, indeed. Moving on to the point of most of this podcast, at least that's the plan. You know how those things go. Amba Edetawa was likely to be the only Syracuse player drafted this weekend, sometime between Thursday and Saturday. I'd say Friday or Saturday is much more likely. Dan, where do you see Amba getting picked, given that mock drafts have kind of been all over the place on him?
Yeah, I mean, I think once you get past, like, the round three guys, you're subject to whatever the specific mod drafter thinks. I see a lot of like round 6, round 7 for him. I'm optimistic. He performed well at the combine. He's coming off of a ridiculous season. I think that when you have a guy who explodes for 1 year in college, like you can kind of put like an asterisk next to that, or at least like a red flag. But you can explain away on this way more than most people, because he transferred schools. He's playing for a brand new coach. He's no longer being thrown to by linebackers. There were a lot of reasons why Amba played a lot better at Syracuse in his 1 year as a grad transfer versus his Maryland career. I think, you know, maybe around the five range is where I would expect him to go. I see NFL.com and CBS both have him at like a 6 to a 7. Either way, I'd be really surprised if he didn't go. And I'm choosing to be cautiously optimistic about it. But I think overall, I truly believe he'll be drafted. Like, the numbers he put up were so incredible. He ran a 4.4 at the combine. Like, he did everything right, I think. So the fact that there's a lot of receivers in this draft doesn't help him. But I feel pretty good about his shot at going at some point, probably the last day of the draft.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I'm going 5 or 6 on him. I think that there's a lot of teams that could use more receivers. He doesn't have any return abilities like Brisley does, but I don't necessarily think any team's jonesing to pick a return man who can't really contribute to the passing game. Like you said, I think the numbers he put up in the combine at the pro day were definitely the types of things that scouts want to see and teams want to be able to add. The real knocks, like, you know, you look at the 1 year spike, easily explained away. The other thing, maybe some of the drops. If people want to pick apart the fact that he was in single coverage a lot, like, who, not his fault that he was in single coverage. It's not his fault that UConn decided that you know, putting a 5'8 corner on an island against him was a good idea. I mean, very clearly wasn't.
And also, if Amba plays in the NFL, he's going to see single coverage. I don't think that people are going to start throwing doubles on Amba as a rookie in the NFL. I'm pretty sure he's going to see those one-on-one mashups.
Exactly. I mean, there are a hell of a lot of really good receivers in the NFL right now. There's a hell of a lot of marginally good receivers in the NFL right now. And they're all enough to be able to take some attention away from him. So, yeah, Amba in single coverage was an absolute menace with the football in his hands. I mean, I think that Pitt game, to be honest, probably showed everything he could be all in one game, just because he showed downfield ability, he showed ability in single coverage, showed ability in double coverage, he showed ability at the line of scrimmage where, you know, he was making things happen out of absolutely nothing, following blockers, or just when there were no blockers, just kind of creating space for himself. That's not the type of thing that a lot of players can do. Usually you're either, you know, the type of guy who's going to catch a screen and then, you know, pick up those 7, you know, dirty yards and move on, or you're going to be someone who can operate, you know, down the field. Don't want to draw comparisons to a guy like Larry Fitzgerald, who's an obvious, you know, future Hall of Famer, but, like, Fitzgerald's one of the first guys that comes to my mind is, like, one of the only players in the NFL right now who can really do both. I think Amba's not going to touch what Fitzgerald and other players like him have done and will do, but I think that, you know, you kind of look at that type of player, though, a type of guy who, again, can operate near the line of scrimmage or down the field. That's a versatile skill set that you don't see a ton in the NFL, and that should serve him well with draft evaluators.
Yeah, I would welcome. I mean, I see one of the mocks that we compiled today have him going to the Packers in the fourth round of draft site, which is probably one of the lesser known ones, had him there. That might be a little bit of a reach, but I would totally take him on the Packers, and I do hope the Packers, my frustrating team, does go after a wide receiver, preferably early, but I would also love to root on Amba in the pros as well.
I mean, I think, honestly, if a team needs a receiver, the Giants sort of need one, but not really, after they grab Brandon Marshall. I do think that, like, this year, like you alluded to earlier, this year's value later in the draft, like in that 3 to 5 range, I mean, you can find, like, I have a feeling like a guy who put up all world numbers like Carlos Henderson is going to be around, like on day two, maybe even into day three, like for no reason. Like Zay Jones, a bunch of other guys. Like these are all players who, like, I don't care what system you're in. If you can catch 120 plus balls, like you deserve to play in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a really interesting group. There isn't like that stud like top five pick guy, but I think there'll probably be maybe three or four that go in the first round, and then there's just like a smattering of really interesting players that will all be in the middle of the draft. And after, like, I think Mike Williams is probably the closest to like a can't miss guy. John Ross will definitely go first round now because he ran that ridiculous 40. He had an awesome year. Corey Davis, awesome player from Western Michigan, who, you know, is injury concerned, but he might have been the first one taken. But then, I mean, you have guys like Juju Smith-Schuster, who was a huge recruit and a really productive player, who might not go until round three. You mentioned Carlos Henderson. There's autoplay video. CBS hated you so much.
CBS is autoplay. CBS and SI, I love their writing, but I can never get myself to go to their goddamn sites because of the autoplay video.
Yes. I mean, I write for a website that has autoplay video. That's what we don't do. We don't have auto audio. It's like, come on. I mean, but then you've even going down the list, Malachi Dupree, like, who knows how good that guy is? He never had a shot. Every time he got decent quarterback play, he put up crazy numbers. Dede Westbrook obviously has some off-field concerns. I think he'd probably be higher projected if not for those. But it's a really interesting group. Hopefully it doesn't take away from what Amba was able to do this year, but as I said, I'm pretty confident that he will find a place this weekend.
Agreed. The other three players that I think have a chance to get invited to camp, maybe some more do, but I think these are the three that we focused on. Brizzly Esteem, a guy who was woefully misused in the beginning of his career, but did prove himself to be a very capable return man. Somebody who could definitely find himself invited to a camp. And then I know Ari and I kind of did some quick previews for this week, Michael Lasker and Omari Palmer. Neither of them were super consistent as offensive linemen for Syracuse, but nonetheless, both have the type of size that they could see them at least get camp invites and then see what kind of shakes out from there. Dan, do you think there's any chance that Briz sneaks in at the end, or is it just because he's a little undersized and, again, a wide receiver-heavy draft probably pushes him into undrafted free agency zone?
Yeah, I don't know how many, like, pure return guys we see, especially in the draft, but also, like,
in general.
Just on NFL rosters in general, just because you can usually find a guy who can contribute another spot. It wouldn't shock me to see him in camp. I think you can set the over-under on Syracuse alumni in Jacksonville Jaguars camp at like 1.5, 2. And he could easily be one of those guys. I believe he was a Maroon recruit, right? He played for Maroon. He's one of the last ones. I think Palmer was, too. I think Palmer was also a Maroon recruit. We saw Maroon hook his guys up in Buffalo with invites to camp. Obviously, it doesn't mean it's going to pan out. He has a job to do. A very good chance that both those two are probably the two that I would think of. I think Laster's a little bit of a longer shot because he was kind of a shakier player. Palmer was a decent starter, and Brizzly was obviously a game breaker on special teams. I think it would be awesome to see Brizzly, who is the closest thing I think our football program has had to a football version of Deion Waiters, at least attitude wise, in the last couple of years. And he's obviously now a cult hero and one of the greatest writers in the world.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I'd be fine with ESPN shaking things up if Deion got a full-time job as the NBA beat writer.
I almost think Deion's the reason all for all this. I think Deion just is going to put all of this out of business.
Yeah, for those who haven't read his Players Tribune post, do so as soon as you possibly can. Deion is a treasure.
It's so good.
He's an absolute treasure of a human being and the type of person that I would very much like to hang out with on a daily basis.
Yeah, when I saw that was posted, I was like talking to some people about the Players Tribune more generally before I release. And I was like, it's funny, if you read like a bunch of these, you can tell like the same couple people write them because like they all have the same voice and like they're all like the same like platitudes and whatnot. And they just all sound like they're coming from the same person. And like it's not a huge secret that the Players Tribune has ghostwriters that sit down and talk to the athletes and then, you know, get a piece out of them. Yeah. I feel like I don't think Deion Sanders computer types these things, but I feel very confident that Deion
said every one of those words.
Not all that, yes. Like, there were some phrases in there that only Deion Waiters would have said, and that's what made that so good. It did not sound like it was coming from someone else. I'm sure someone else typed it and published it, but like, Deion definitely said most of that, and it was amazing. It was probably the best thing that they've had in that site. And there's been, like, every so often there's a pretty good, interesting article on there. That was probably the most, I mean, it went super viral yesterday. It went more viral. I mean, it was being shared more than the latest giant piece from what's his name, the big Pat Riley story yesterday.
Oh god,
I feel like an idiot. Big ESPN feature writer from Mississippi, whose name is just massively escaping me right now. Ray Thompson. Yes. Like, he put out this awesome Pat Riley piece yesterday, and obviously, and every time Ray Thompson writes anything, like, it goes around, everyone reads, like, all the big sports fans read it. His work is, like, untouchable. He's one of the best working writers we have, and thank God he was not involved today. Deion's piece got way more traction.
Yeah.
And coming from the same team. Like, they were both Miami Heat pieces, and Deion's, I think I saw, shared, like, three times as much. So, go read that if you haven't already. It will make you very happy. Deion might be my favorite pro athlete at this point.
Yeah, he is. And to revisit a conversation from weeks ago, I think I'd be fine with him on the Knicks now. Let's just make it happen.
Like, as a Knicks fan, you just might as well. Like, what's the harm?
No,
he's
going to
be
no
entertaining.
Like, yeah, once we got rid of JR, like, you might as well make this thing entertaining because it's going to be a disaster. And, like, Deion's the type of glue guy who could either drive Porzingis out the door or keep him there despite his better judgment.
And also, you know that Deion's not going to play in the triangle. It doesn't matter if they're supposed to be. Deion's not going to play the triangle offense. So if you have him on the court, you're playing whatever Deion... You're playing a Deion offensive system.
Which, yeah, that's fine with me.
Better than what you had.
Anything would be.
Yes, in the sage words of Deion, it's fucking overtime.
Yeah. So, looking up and down, I know we talked about this a little bit before the podcast. Looking up and down the current roster, I think there's a lot more guys who can be drafted on this team than this year's, you know, one player might indicate. Dan, just a quick kind of breezing through, who are the guys that stand out to you as potential future NFL draft ease?
I'm looking now. I think Steve Ishmael has the makings of an NFL type receiver.
Second round, right now, I think. I've got.
Well, we'll see. I mean, it depends on what production. Like, he needs a big year. If he has an Amba type year,
I don't even think he needs that. I think if he catches 70 passes between his blocking, his expert route running, and just the abilities that he's been able to show on really shitty offensive teams, I think he's a second-round pick.
It's certainly possible. And I think we brought up his blocking like a week or two ago. Like, that really helps. He's an obvious guy. He's also been, like, the problem. I think if Amba had, you know, 3 years of Ishmael-type production before this year, like, he'd be a cinch for, like, the second or third round.
Right.
Ishmael's been a productive player on bad offenses. And then last year took kind of a backseat to other guys. But I think if he breaks out the way that we expect him to, he is definitely a candidate to go. Eric Dungy obviously will be the one that most people think of. It's kind of hard to project with him. He doesn't have like that class. He's a good arm, but he doesn't have the classic like NFL throwing motion, big like downfield pocket passer arm.
But he
can drive the ball for sure. I wouldn't be shocked to see him going like as like a sixth, seventh round quarterback if he keeps on, you know, his upper trajectory. Obviously, injuries are a major concern.
But, like, Matt Johnson didn't get drafted.
Yeah. I mean, there's no guarantee, especially with quarterbacks. Like, you never know how many are going to take in at all. It might just be like...
Like, I think he's a very good college quarterback. I think he's someone who probably doesn't get drafted. I also think he's someone who can probably go find a career in something else, and he'd be fine with it at the end of the day, too. I think if he doesn't make it in the NFL, if he doesn't get drafted, I think the CFL would suit him just fine. But I don't see him as someone who would be content with like that sort of thing. I think if he didn't make the NFL, he'd say screw it and he'd just go be an entrepreneur somewhere or something.
Certainly possible. We'll see. I mean, he could always break out for a crazy year, but obviously, like having a crazy Dino Babers stat year doesn't necessarily mean you will get picked. The NFL is always skeptical about system quarterbacks and whatnot. Elsewhere, I think the defensive end, Zaire Franklin, I don't think he doesn't strike me as a guy who's going to put up like crazy combine numbers, but I think he's just been so productive that he's a leader and he has all the good, like pretty much all the good qualities off the field that you could possibly want.
He's not small like some of the other Syracuse linebackers have been.
No, I don't think it's blow anyone away athletically. But he's just a really smart player. He's productive. He's not have any question marks in terms of like he's going to be a 3-year captain, which is right. Awesome. He just strikes me as a guy who will probably go in like the 6th or 7th round. But one guy who's always interested in me, he hasn't really put it all together yet. If he does at some point, Jonathan Thomas is just such an athletic freak, and it's like he's come along pretty well this spring. If he puts together like a big year and becomes like an impact playmaker on the defensive end, which hasn't happened yet, but I think athletically he's like one of the guys that looks like an NFL player if it's a matter of getting to play like one.
Yeah, I'd like to see him make some more plays in space. I think he's someone who could end up, to be honest, getting shifted out to safety in the pros.
It's possible.
But yeah,
he hasn't really filled out all the way, so
no, it is possible. Yeah, I think if he can make plays in space, if he can show himself to be more than someone who can, disrupt passing lanes and blitz, that's always been his issue, is just like not just starting, but staying as the like entrenched starter. I think there's, because there's so many eyes on, Bennett and Franklin, I think that Thomas could fly under the radar once again, we'll see what happens there. But I agree with you, the freakish athleticism on his end is definitely gives him maybe a bigger upside than even someone like Bennett, who's been a much more productive player.
Right.
I think Irv has a chance.
Yeah, it's a matter of finding a role. If he looks like. I think there are still some growing pains at wide receiver, and that's, I'm saying that like pretty lightly, considering he had like an amazing season last year. I think if he really like looks the part at receiver over the next couple of years, or what's he, a junior? Is he going to be a junior or a senior?
Yeah, this is Irv's senior.
Okay, so yeah, if he just looks the part this year as a receiver, he continues to put up big numbers. He definitely has the athleticism. I don't know that he'd be a guy that I think is like a cinch to be drafted, but I think he's definitely a guy that someone will take a shot on for a camp invite, and he could put up another crazy statistical year, and that can really bump him up. But he's kind of like a tweener in terms of receivers, where he's not like the obvious like Tavon Austin stat back, but he's also not a guy like Ishmael, who like looks like your classic X.
Right. I buy that. Other guys, I think it's really early on Armstrong, but I really like him long-term. I think Antoine Cordy's a guy who's going to get looks. He's a little undersized, but I think that he's just enough of a playmaker. And then again, I think a lot of these guys too, like I think Ravian Pierce is someone who by the end of his SU career could turn into a draft pick. I think Evan Foster's really early in his career, but a guy who could round into a really solid defensive back prospect. Some other guys.
Yeah, Pierce is his big catch in the spring game was like one of the highlights for me. He looked really fast. For a tight end, for a guy his size, like he looked like he was probably running like a 4.6, 4.7 at a pretty solid tight end size, which is impressive.
Yeah, I'm very excited about him this year and then going forward. I think Nadarius Fagan's another one down the road that we'd probably want to talk about. I think Tim Walton, I don't think we've seen enough of him to know for sure, but he seems like a guy who could potentially be really good. There's a lot of others here.
I think my last. What was that? Early Hoffricker.
Huh?
Hoffrick.
I buy it. I buy it. I don't know
continuing
where.
Continuing in the. I mean, we'll see. I mean, if he stays primarily a punter, I think he's a good enough a start. I don't know what kicking, you know, what lies ahead for him as a kicker, but I think just with what we've seen of him as a punter, because obviously he won't do both in the NFL. No one does that. But I think he's off to a really strong. I mean, as we outlined, again, I'm not sure if it's like a week or two ago, but he was probably better as a first-year starter than even Riley Dixon was, and Riley Dixon is now, no joke, like one of the five best punters in the NFL as a rookie. will probably be a Pro Bowler a lot based on how he started, especially because punting doesn't seem to be as, like, strangely year-to-year as kicking. Punters seem to stick around a little more. I mean, there's no reason why Hoffrick can't follow in that.
I would certainly agree. Why don't we head to halftime, and then we could talk a little bit more about the draft.
Cool.
So, Dan, what have you been drinking?
I've had a decent amount of stuff since we last spoke. Let's see. I had Magnetic Tape from Grimm Artisanal Ales, which I bring up a fair amount. I think it's the first time I've had that one, but Grimm, it's really, really good stuff here in the city. That was a really nice, hazy, unfiltered IPA. Really delicious. Some other interesting stuff. I had a bunch of Brooklyn Blast the other night, which is one of my favorites from Brooklyn. Quite good. Nice, really, like, pretty alcoholic. And you definitely feel that one. I had Wave Chaser IPA from Montauk, which was pretty solid. And then a friend of mine who lives in the Philadelphia area, who is a friend of the pod, brought me a 4-pack from his local brewery, Hawken Brewery. I'm currently drinking their Type A, which is a super, super, super hoppy hop bomb, West Coast style IPA. The best one I've had from them so far, which I had the other night, was their MC5 IPA, which was really, really hoppy as well, but also like super juicy. Really enjoyed that one. So if you're in the Philly area, the MC5 from Conshohocken definitely gets an instant recommendation from them.
Fair enough. I was distracted for a second because I just saw the shot that Jimmy Butler hit at the end of the third. That was dirty.
I am actually mad despite the fact that they haven't won in like 3 weeks and are down 8-2. I don't know why.
Yeah, I'm not really one to watch a ton of regular season baseball on television. I love watching games in person. Especially this early, the NBA playoffs are on, the NHL playoffs are on. I can't spend too much time, especially when the Mets do that thing they do at, like, some point in the first 2 months of every year where they just, like, lose every game.
That's right now.
Looking forward to that. I'm gonna take my frustrations out on watching the Dodgers this weekend at the stadium, get a couple Dodger dogs, and hopefully watch the Dodgers pummel the Philadelphia Phillies, because, sure.
That sounds like a better alternative than watching the Mets lose to the Braves for, like, the fourth straight time.
Yeah, because the Braves are...
Which they just did. Game's over.
Braves are awful, so of course you would. I would highly recommend, if you find yourself near Twitter... watching what Jimmy Butler just did to embarrass the Celtics at the end of the third. A lot of fun there.
I look for it as you talk about beers.
Yeah. I think the NBA probably just tweeted it from their account. Things that I drank in the last week, had a bunch of different things. I mentioned this one a couple weeks ago, but had it on draft this week. Zero to Sexy from Figueroa Mountain. It was a coffee golden ale, which is a really cool combination. Had an Alpine Duet, which is still, despite the Green Flash acquisition, one of my favorites. Lone Pint and their Yellow Rose, which I will stand by as one of the better IPAs around. Very, very good. Actually, a friend brought over some Tart Mango Cart from Golden Road. Kind of a... it was a mango Berliner Weiss. It was under 4%, but an enjoyable sipper for that. Had from Phantom Carriage their Broad Acres Berliner Weiss with Blood Oranges. At St. Arnold's Pub Crawl, it's a pale ale from Texas. And yeah, so not a ton of things, but enough. And they were all very good. Definitely a lighter, not lighter drinking weekend, but just a casual drinking weekend, which I'm more than fine with.
Yeah, that Jimmy Butler shot was something.
Definitely enjoyable. Really hope the Celtics lose just for the hell of it.
Yeah, I mean, when you have Dwayne Wade, who looks like he's going to do a triple-double tonight, you know, doing his whole playoff thing where he remembers how to shoot, or learns how to shoot, because he doesn't do that otherwise. That'll dish you.
Hooray, Bulls. I don't know why I'm rooting for them, but whatever. I don't really want to root for the Bulls, to be honest, but I don't really have a choice here. Deion Waiters' injury forced me to have to.
Yes. But that's a Knicks fan. Rooting for Miami Heat is something that you were so much more accustomed to.
I know. This was really a no-win situation for me. Either I was going to be rooting for the Bulls, the Celtics, the Heat, or potentially the Pacers if the tiebreaker shook out differently. All of those things just sound miserable to me.
Yes. I mean, after stemming from all rivalries from the 90s when you were rooting for Ahoya, so it's appropriate.
Yeah, and Knicks fandom has never made sense. Don't at me. And anyway, to end our podcast tonight, I'm going to be a little abbreviated. I figured we'd talk a little bit about the rest of the NFL draft, Dan, since you and I both have interests that lie outside of Syracuse-specific things. Do you think Cleveland should trade this pick?
I think all things equal, yes. I don't think they should based on the fact that I think everyone would like to trade their picks. So I think you're better off just taking one of the surer things at the top of the draft, because I just don't think that in this draft there's going to be value to attain there.
I buy it. Yeah, I think Garrett's the pick. That's fine. As long as they don't pick a quarterback, we're good. As long as, to be honest, the further a quarterback falls in this draft is fine to me. I don't know if you saw my article on the comeback. I was just kind of digging into just how much of a crapshoot quarterbacks have been, how virtually all of them, save like three, have sucked in the last like 10 years. Doesn't really make any sense. And just goes to show that, like, yeah, you shouldn't draft a quarterback. You should really go find someone who's at least proven something. That also doesn't mean that you do what the Bears did and hand Mike Glennon a shitload of money for no reason.
Yeah, I think there's just a lot of interesting factors into why quarterbacks become such a like you said, a crapshoot. I think there's, just to begin with, like, it's a rare commodity. There's only one playing per team for the most part, at least effectively. Like, if you have an NFL quarterback in your college team, you're probably not splitting time with someone else. And then you even reduce that from the amount of effective college quarterbacks to then the ones that can make the jump to the NFL on a given year. That's what, like three or four, maybe?
Yeah, I'd say that's probably the max cap, despite the fact that like 10 get chosen every
year. Right. Yeah. Like, I think in the best quarterback classes, you have maybe guys that end up being productive NFL players. Not even just like, not necessarily like Pro Bowl level starters, just like guys who are one of the 40 best NFL quarterbacks at a given time.
Right.
And then you reduce that from, then you add in the fact that quarterbacks, because of all that, the value is artificially inflated pretty much every year, where, you know, how often does the best actual player get drafted? Maybe once every 2 or 3 years, because quarterbacks go number one or go in the top five so often, even if that quarterback might be the 20th best prospect.
Right.
It just adds in, and getting one is so important because you really can't win at any meaningful level without at least, you know, probably a top 10 to 15 quarterback in the NFL. It's just such an important position, and there's such a drive to get one and to keep one that it makes it so hard to, like, accurately evaluate one. And I almost don't blame people for it up, because you can say, hey, we're not going to draft quarterback until we have the right pick and we are certain that this is the guy, because then you could go 5 years without drafting one, and then you're punting 5 years. Maybe you could be the Houston Texans and have an awesome team around
mercenary.
An awesome quarterback. And you can, you know, depends on how you look at it. You either lucked your way into the playoffs with a bad quarterback, or you wasted an awesome team with a bad quarterback. So it's really tricky. I have no idea which of these guys I would take. I would probably default to Deshaun Watson, just because of a bunch of fairly pedestrian-looking prospects. He's the one who's won a lot, and I don't think his physical tools are that much less than any of the other guys to make it so obvious that he shouldn't be the first one taken. But, I mean, it wouldn't shock me if he was the fourth one taken at this point.
Yeah, I'd go with Watson. I mean, the college fan in me says, screw it, just take Pat Mahomes. But I'm going to go with Watson here. I just think, while he's definitely not the polished NFL player just yet, very few are. You're not getting an Andrew Luck every year. He's, you know, the type of guy you were alluding to earlier is the okay quarterback. You're actually, you know, the certifiable best player here. I think a lot of that, too, comes from the fact that he played in a system that was geared toward the NFL, and that's one of the biggest benefits of Stanford. That's why you see so many Stanford players get picked in the last decade, because they play pro style. They're also smart guys. You don't really have to worry about off-the-field stuff. It's just a very – it's a standby group that makes scouts feel, you know, warm and fuzzy inside, that they can deliver this list of players to their GM and go, oh, hey, look, here's a Stanford guy, played in a pro-style system. He checks all these other buzzwords. He scored an X on the Wonderlic, whatever. I think that, you know, Stanford fills a need for a lot of these guys, but a lot of Stanford players have also been successful. There's plenty that haven't been, but I will say that Stanford players have done pretty well. The tough part this year, and that goes for most years, because obviously if you have an awful quarterback, you're probably not doing well, which means you're in the top half of the draft. I could easily see any of the teams in the top probably 7. So before you get to Carolina, pick a quarterback, and that's highly unfortunate for them because, yeah, as you said, none of these players are top 7 to 10 prospects. I think it'd be a crime if Trubisky goes first, just because I feel like I watched enough North Carolina football to know that, like, Trubisky's a good player. I just don't know if he's a top 10 pick, and I don't think he's a certifiable, like, NFL starter. I just, from a value standpoint, I just don't know if you spend a top 15 pick on a quarterback unless you're sure that he's going to be able to get you the playoffs.
Yeah, I think Trubisky is like one of those guys where in a given year, like after he was a one-year starter and put up his numbers, like it feels like he should be a guy who's like, oh, they could go get him in the fourth round and maybe he turns into a really nice player. And instead, people are like projecting ahead of where a guy like that usually would be and making him, you know, it's like they're going for his best possible outcome versus like a relatively solid idea of what he should be. Because I think if Trubisky was, I think he's a good player. I think there's a decent chance he's a solid NFL player. I think if it was so obvious, like, he would have just beaten out Marquise Williams last 2 years ago. And I know there was, like, some locker room politics about that, but if he was such a bona fide NFL stud quarterback, like, he would have been playing more than he played. So that just lingers in the back of my mind. And it's tough to shake that. That being said, like, it's tough because you could argue the Titans are the first team, and they're picking, you know, they got lucky on a trade. They're picking fifth. They're the first ones who don't really have any need at quarterback. Obviously, the Jags and the Bears are doing what they're doing this year. But 1 through 4 could all use a quarterback, all things equal. The Jets could use a quarterback. The Chargers are probably not going to draft one yet, but, I mean, they could use one eventually.
The Chargers were at, like, the back end of this first round. They seem like a team that would use that pick there.
Right, but they're at 7, and then and they probably have ideas of trying to compete right away in L.A. and also trying to, you know, salvage what is an interesting roster, just one that underachieves a lot, but, like, has
all
some
the time.
Often, most of the time, almost always.
Literally so, every year but 1995. or 94, or whatever the hell the year was that they made the Super Bowl.
So, like, in a different quarterback class, I think 5... well, I don't know if the Jags would, but, I mean, the current administration there, shout out to Syracuse, is not married at all to Blake Bortles, so, I mean, they probably would if it was a different situation here, but could all use quarterbacks. So, it's almost hard to believe that Trubisky won't go to one of them, or Watson, or you know, Mahomes or whomever at this point. I just don't think it's the right move. The problem is, like, as I said, you have to get one eventually, and it just seems almost like a sure thing that one of these five teams in the top six, besides the Titans, the Browns, Niners, Bears, Jags, and Jets, like, one of them, it just seems like a bite the bullet and just saying, you know, we got to take a shot at quarterback because we have to.
Yeah, I'm seeing a situation like, what was it? Was that 09? When was it that the Jets, like, moved up out of nowhere to grab Sanchez?
When was that? 09, that right?
Yeah, like, I could definitely see, let's go with Buffalo doing that this year.
Well, they have Tyrod, but they could.
But they're stupid, so.
They are stupid, and they're probably not, like the Bills aren't, like, they probably like the 10 this year, but it's not, like, it's probably a goal, but not necessarily a realistic belief that they will. So if you're the 10th overall, and you really like one of these quarterbacks, and you don't need to stick them in right away, it's not the worst idea. I just don't know that this is the quarterback draft to do that. Now, if it was a different draft and there was, like, the number two quarterback on the board, flip to 10, like, that might not be the worst thing because you wouldn't have to throw him into the wolves, but you can also, like, say, hey, we're building the future, and you would hope that most of your fans are realistic enough to realize, hey, the Bills are probably not going to beat out the Patriots and Dolphins, who were in the playoffs last year, if I'm not mistaken, and make a giant jump to the playoffs for the first time in, like, two decades. So...
And the Dolphins did that with Tannehill injured for, what, like, much of the last four or five games?
Yeah, and also just being Ryan Tannehill in general. I know he was actually pretty good when he played last year up until the playoffs, but, yeah, I don't know. This is, like, I've seen everyone saying it down the stretch, like, outside, it seems pretty likely that Jared will go one, and he probably should. He's a freak. I know there are questions about him bringing it all the time, but... I think that's a pretty safe pick. Like, I think if you pick Garrett one of the Browns and he flames out, like, you're probably going to be nitpicking by saying the Browns, you know, busted their first pick when it's the one that almost everyone says they should make. So,
yeah, I'd be fine with that. I think what this draft aggravates with is the fact that, like, you don't know what the hell's going to happen after that. Like, the 49ers could easily, you know, F up two. The Bears could easily F things up at three. I really wouldn't fault any
the team. The Jags are now because they're all... I mean, historically, the Jags are one of the worst managed franchises ever, but they're like... It's a brand new year, and one that we are at least somewhat... we have positive feelings about in general, but who knows? Who knows what Tom Coughlin is, like, running a franchise from that level? Doug Marrone is obviously... You know, he had an interesting first couple years of the Bills. It wasn't like he didn't knock it out of the park. He was more successful than the people that have come after him. So there's no real telling what they're going to do there.
Yeah, I'm really hoping they pick Leonard Fournette. Because as much as the Jags have been run terribly, when the Jags have stability at running back, they've actually been a lot of fun. Fred Taylor, James Stewart, MJD, and yeah, maybe Leonard Fournette. Fournette's probably the best offensive player in this draft. I think anyone who's watched even a second of his college tape, or in our case, just been victimized by him as a team, would definitely side with Fournette. I definitely, over the years, drifted to the school of thought that drafting offensive skill players is tough. I think drafting running backs is tough, especially just because you can plug in just about anybody behind a good offensive line and be much better. But yeah, I think Fournette's the real deal. I've always been a big fan of him and his style of play. If Jacksonville doesn't end up with him, then they better draft, you know, one of the several elite defensive backs or defensive linemen that's available to them. Because otherwise, this team is once again going to just squander the young talent. And, you know, I know that next Seahawks thing was what Gus Bradley was looking to do. They still can do it, even with Marrone. I think it's just a question of whether or not they just want to keep amassing, you know, that all that young talent on the defensive side. So I hope they pick Fournette if he's there, but otherwise, you have a bevy of defenders who you can bank on.
Yeah, I mean, I think Fournette is probably the most sure thing in terms of offensive players. I think he will be a good pro. I don't know. I mean, I'm still pretty weary about drafting a running back that high. I think you had a different situation with Ezekiel Elliott last year where Fournette's a really amazing runner. Elliott was a really amazing runner and the best blocking running back in college football and a really, really good pass catcher and was on a team that was drafting artificially high based on a quarterback injury and also had the best offensive line in football. So I think his being, you know, swept to fourth, which was still pretty controversial at the time. A lot of people thought that the Cowboys should have taken Jalen Ramsey, who was awesome last year as a rookie as well. I thought he was a more logical early first-round running back than Fournette. I think Fournette would probably be more of like a 8-12 guy. But, I mean, if you want to try to add to that offense, which has some interesting pieces, and occasionally okay quarterback in Bortles, and by occasionally okay, I mean in the fourth quarters in garbage time and only fantasy-wise, adding a running back to that is maybe the worst thing. So I don't know. I also can't ever really fault for if someone wants to go take like Malik Hooker, who I think could be a pretty special safety, or Jamal Adams, or one of those type of guys.
Yeah, I'm pretty high on Malik Hooker. I'm pretty high on Lattimore as well. I think both those Ohio State guys. If they don't go in the top 10, something's gone terribly wrong. Jonathan Allen's another guy who better go in the top 10.
Yeah, Jonathan Allen, I think, was the best player in college football last year, regardless of position. Like, I just think he was such a dominant force against every single team he played, pretty much. He commanded triple teams on occasion. If the Browns took Jonathan Allen number one, I would have no problem with it. I can see why you go for Garrett, because he plays more impact position. But you also don't get defensive tackles that get the type of pass rush and also just play their position as fundamentally sound as Jonathan Allen does. Like, he's one of the best defensive tackles I've ever seen at the college level. So whichever team takes him, like, I don't think there's a spot where it's too early to take Jonathan Allen. And that starts from the Browns on down. So I don't expect him to come out of leave the top four or five. I'd be shocked.
Agreed. And then I guess lastly, the last player I wanted to even mention here was Christian McCaffrey. I really hope that the team that picks him doesn't ruin him. You know, the NFL has a tendency to ruin really fun NFL college football players. If McCaffrey goes to a real stodgy type team, I think he's screwed. But if McCaffrey goes to, I know I'm looking right now at ESPN's mock draft. If he goes to a team like Carolina, I really, really like what McCaffrey and Cam Newton could do. As kind of like, you know, a college fan's wet dream offense, if that's not too crude of a point to put on it.
Yeah, I'm in on McCaffrey. I feel like it's just in like the last like 2 weeks, people are like, wait, he could also like catch passes and stuff. It's like, yeah, he's not just like, you can do other things with him than run him up the middle. Like,
also, he's in a pro-style offense.
Right, and he played in a pro-style offense and was also still super
monster.
NFL people can be so dumb sometimes. I don't see him being like a top 10 pick, but it sounds like he's sneaking into that general area. Panthers would be interesting. The Saints at 11. I think they'd probably like to focus on defense because their defense hasn't existed in about a decade, but like that's an offense that I would be interested to see him on.
You know where he'd thrive and I would hate to see him go there?
I mean, the Patriots.
Yep.
I mean, that's the one everyone said because they were in the late first round. I don't think they'll last that long now, yeah. But like a month ago when everyone thought he'd be like the end of the first round, like it just seemed too obvious. And they're actually not even there anymore because they traded with the Saints. So they got a Cook. So they don't pick until
sometime much later.
Like the middle of the second round, I think.
The Saints
first pick is 72.
The Saints have put themselves in a situation where now they have to draft a quarterback. With that pick, if they don't do it earlier, I think if Pat Mahomes is still on the board, that he's the guy. I think Deshaun Watson. There's no way Deshaun Watson's still on the board. If he is, I think a lot of college fans are going to be really aggravated. But if he is on the board for some reason, I think Deshaun Watson's there. I think whichever of like the big four quarterbacks don't go, gets picked there. But I do think DeShone Kizer might be a better pro than all of them.
It's certainly possible. I really like Kizer's arm. I think Brian Kelly just did everything possible to ruin him last year. Brian Kelly's full season and Jeff Melzon in Auburn, I think season opener when he rotated quarterbacks like every five plays, were the two most mind-boggling, or basically any game where Kelly pulled Kizer, like, was so frustrating. And obviously, I'm not a Notre Dame fan. I don't care. I thoroughly enjoyed them going 4-8 last year. But, like, I appreciate good quarterback play. And Kizer throws a beautiful ball. He has a big arm. He's athletic. Like, he is one of the more impressive players in this draft. It would not shock me if he was sitting in the fifth round and end up being a really good NFL starter in, like, 2 or 3 years. Like, if the Arizona Cardinals pick DeShone Kizer late, like, mid rounds, and he steps in and takes over for Carson Palmer, like, that could be an awesome situation for them.
Yeah, since the Cardinals have never, I don't think the Cardinals have ever drafted, like, a quarterback that worked out for them. Then think about all their great quarterbacks of late, and none of
Palmer and Warner.
Yeah.
They both acquired, like, after everyone thought they were going to retire, and it worked out.
This would be the first win for them since Jake Plummer, potentially.
Yeah, which was what, like the early 90s?
Yeah, when they drafted him. And Plummer's best seasons were still with the Broncos.
And Jake Plummer was also like pretty mediocre overall.
He was.
He was like like the benchmark average quarterback when he was, you know, at his best. He was drafted in
95?
He's 42 now, which actually seems like, I thought he'd actually be older. 97, that's actually later than I thought. From Arizona State.
Yeah, I kind of like confused him with Druckenmiller for a second as far as like when they were drafted.
No, I definitely thought Jake Plummer was like already a pretty established quarterback by 97.
Oh, no.
But either way, that's like, yeah. I also felt like he played for the Cardinals more. He played there from 97 to 02, and then 4 years with the Broncos, and that was it. Yep.
Huh. Look at that. All right. I think that's a fun place to stop.
Jake Plummer also threw a lot of interceptions. Oh, this is fun. How many touchdowns? What do you think Jake Plummer's touchdown interception ratio was for his career?
1-to-1.
It's exactly 1-to-1. 161 to 161.
Yes.
Amazing.
You are the best, Jake Plummer.
He was the perfect. I mean, that's not average now, but at the time, that was kind of average. Like, obviously, the game's changed, but that's just unbelievable.
Could you imagine? I would have loved to see Jake Plummer like do the Kurt Warner like opposite. Like, I'd love to have seen Jake Plummer in the Arena League, like back when the Arena League like mattered, not like the current iteration of it.
Where, yeah, it's like basically barely a viable thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's that's going to have to stand up to, you know, not a long. We didn't have like a super long Jake Plummer sidetrack, but we did a couple minutes there, and that more than I ever thought we would. So
you can always bank shout on out to Jake like, Plummer. Yeah, you can always bank on one of these for us, like something we never thought of.
I don't think he's going to become a recurring segment, but he got his shine today, as Jake Plummer certainly deserves to be on a Syracuse-ish based podcast in the middle of it, April in 2017.
A Syracuse agnostic podcast. That broadcast once a week.
Yes.
Anyway, Dan, thank you as always for joining. Much obliged.
Yes. Shout out to everyone at ESPN today that got laid off. We hope that you guys all make it through.
Agreed. Thoughts?
Because most of you guys are good.
Yeah, most people were fired were good, and that's the biggest crime of all this. I would not have shed a tear for Darren Revelle or Stephen A. Smith.
I actually was shocked Revelle made it, because like, I still don't know what he does. but he appears to have made it. So keep on reprinting your press releases, Darren. You apparently are doing enough to get paid, so good for you. Yeah.
Whatevs, man. Anyway, that was Dan. I'm John. Thanks for listening to Troy Noon's An Absolute Podcast. Be sure to rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, on Blog Talk. And there's a lot of non-revenue sports and lacrosse happening this weekend. So go Orange.
Go Orange.